This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks for coming on the show, Colin. Really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on, Pat. This is quite exciting for me.
And can you tell our listeners who you are, please, and your company?
Yeah, my name is Colin Morris. I run Kingston Frameworks. We are a unique company in that we started out as a custom framing shop. Not a lot of people have even experienced custom framing. From my math, about 3 to 10% of the population has ever even tried custom framing. That's the business that my father founded in 1982. It started out as DIY or do it yourself, but it's morphed over this 42-year period into basically 2018. At that point, when I got in, we did both printing and framing. And then since then, since the pandemic, we've brought on all kinds of fine art services. So art restoration, art shipping, custom art crates. Yes, still custom framing, but we also do like acrylic display boxes. And probably most exciting for us is our artist wholesale program, where we're working directly with artists as basically a drop shipper and a supplier. We started treating them as a B2B client and really shaped our entire service for that around them. And that's been a huge growth opportunity. So we've really become a lot. And I like to catch that all by saying we are a fine art services company.
And how many total years in business, including when your dad ran it?
So I guess 42 now. As of 1982, we just passed our 42-year mark in June.
Wow, congratulations. Anyone listening to the show that runs a business knows how tough it can be in year one, two, and three. I can't imagine what it'd be in year 42. That's great.
Gone through lots of different business cycles, that's for sure. And I benefit from the history, of course, and the reputation that he built.
So despite the fact that you grew up in an entrepreneurial family, you still decided to take over the reins. That's really interesting. There must have been, is it something you always wanted to do? Like, sitting around the dinner table and hearing these types of conversations within the family, did you gravitate towards it, or did you want to go in a different direction?
Well, it's so funny, Dad really had never tried to get us involved. I think he worked really, really hard. And I think some folks who've had entrepreneurial parents can relate to that, where they work those 60-hour weeks. And in my case, the way that Dad took that is like, I don't want this for my sons. He had me and my brother. He didn't necessarily want, and like, unless we showed interest, which, he was always open to, he didn't want to, burden us, is how he felt. He worked very hard for this business. So it was sort of a funny roundabout way that I got involved. I became a dad very young. I was 21 years old. And the first thing I thought I needed to do was grow the heck up and start working. And the only thing that would take me without any kind of degree were sales jobs. And I learned sales from really that sort of grassroots, like raw sales mantra style level. Like you imagine
old school.
Zig Ziglar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I had all that training, and that was a full evolution. I spent about 10 years in sales, graduating, I would say, to more sophisticated sales, direct sales in financial advice. That was, I'd say, where I really learned to be a good salesperson, really learning to just serve people and help understand their problems. And it was, I started thinking I knew things about finance and corporations and businesses because I was studying that stuff through this career. And Dad said to me one night while we're just having dinner, sort of a family thing, he says, I'm probably going to have to close the business and sell it for parts. And that was like, whoa, no way. I immediately was like, no, Dad, your business is worth something. You have no debt. You have like loyal clientele, you got a brand in this town, like it's one of a kind, almost because of the size of my hometown, Kingston, almost a monopoly, honestly. So I was like, there's no way that makes any sense. And of course he's like, well, it's only worth something if someone wants to buy it, right? It's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And no one wants this. Honestly, and I say this now, I say it kind of frequently, I think, because it occurred to me that this was probably true. He sort of Mr. Miyagi'd me, you know, Karate Kid. I'm like trying to convince him that it's a good idea to try to sell it. And I'm like actually convincing me that it's worth something. And then next thing you know, in 2 weeks, I'm like, you know, we should talk about maybe me taking over. Because, you know, he wanted to retire. And it took 2 years. But in 2018, I did buy out his business partner and we became 50-50. And from there, it's been a roller coaster with COVID. And now I own it 100%. And this last year, we moved. We expanded to a much larger location. I think some of my ideas have finally been paying off and the business is running better than ever. So it's been a large experiment, I would say. And I hate to go on too long about your question, but that's the long and short of it. That's how I got in. And that's how we got where we are today.
That's a great story. Not to relive COVID or anything, but I'm curious, you know, you have this brick and mortar business, COVID hits, things get shut down. Are you in the online space now at all in terms of selling your goods online, or did you kind of ride it out as the brick and mortar? How did you pivot there?
It was always my goal to get more digital, but I found it very challenging to figure that out. I mean, I'd never actually done it. Like I said, I was in sales, but I always talked about it and always wanted to, and I tried to take little steps and nothing quite made sense yet. I was still learning the business in 2018, and it was 2020 that really forced me to get more digital. And it was a gradual process of uncovery. You see, our business is service, and it's a service that's very physical. We need the physical item generally to create it. Now, we could print something and then frame it, and there is a market for that. However, we are more custom oriented and less retail. And I think we were reluctant to go that route for a long time. That's changing now, and we are investing big into digital. So I'd say over the past 5 years, I went from I want to do this to starting to figure out how to do this. There's a reason this industry hasn't done a lot of it. And also now I'd say really doubling down. We're now doing a custom web app for that artist wholesale market that I talked about, because I think it's a no-brainer that it makes it your whole company more scalable. But it's funny because we are so bricks and mortar, we're so used to that. I think there's a lot of challenges to turning that into a digital business. You really have to think through the customer journey. And I think it's where our next phase of growth comes from ultimately. Like our new website, which we plan to launch August, September, is going to be all about guiding the customer through those myriad of decisions that normally we do in person as easily as possible. And it's really like that's the laser focus. And I think it's a tall order because it's a complicated industry. But I think if we can do it, then we crack a code that no one else has. And I think that's a competitive advantage.
That's really exciting to be able to be at the head of the curve like that. Good for you.
I will say, digital marketing still a huge cloud of unknown for me. Yeah. And, talking to you, you know, that's your world, and I'm pretty good at the grassroots level, I think, but digital marketing, man, like you never know. You're always afraid you're going to waste that next ad dollar, or that, you know, you're going to work really hard for social media for very little. I think we're pushing in that direction, but there's still a lot to go there. So that would be our next hurdle.
You're giving me a layup here to lead into a pitch, but I won't do that to our listeners.
Yeah, you can pitch me after.
Okay. What are the, along those same lines, you've owned the business since 2018. Is there, other than pandemic related, is there two or three business lessons that you've learned that you'd pass on to some of our listeners that either may be thinking of starting a business or maybe struggling with their current business? Is there anything, pieces of wisdom you'd pass along to those listeners?
You know, it's a funny thing, Pat. Recently, just decided to take on another business. And in doing so, I'm excited to be applying some of those lessons that I learned the hard way earlier on in the game. I would say that some of those lessons that have really been like standing out as I go through it all again is to focus number one on brand building. And I say that because I don't think I understood the value and importance of brand at first. In this new business, I have to build a new brand. And I'd say I'm far more methodical in that approach, far more clear on deciding who we are early on, and then testing that and just putting it out there and seeing what the responses are, And it's never been easier than with social media. Social media really allows you to engage with the customer right off the bat. We're doing active things to build that following, like competitions, like giveaways, that kind of thing, and just engagement style posts. I think today, follow what Gary Vaynerchuk says about brand building. Use social media to your advantage to really decide not only who you are, but how you relate to your marketplace. I would also say that the second lesson, and I'll just leave it at that, is blocking your time right is an absolute necessity. I have been a victim of my own. I definitely have that, you know, high ideation style brain, maybe not always that focused. Some people call it a certain four-letter word. But for me, time blocking was never something I did well. I was very reactive to the next fire. And I've spent way too many days and weeks not getting the productive thing done and just doing the busy work. And I can only imagine if I could have that time back, knowing this and getting better at it, I would be so much further ahead. So what's the actual method there? First things first is I put a huge priority on creative work. Now, that means spending first thing in the morning. Like, I don't really have some big fancy routine or anything like that. I just get to work. I work like a farmer. I wake up and I start working. And then I only book my meetings later in the day. In fact, now I back end them. So I start like at 4 o'clock. That's the first meeting that I'll book. The next one will go maybe at 3:30 or 3. You know, that way I have as much time in the morning undisturbed, and able to get the big work done. Still, I mean, you still have to interact with your clients. And I definitely have always maintained that discipline to know what the client is saying and thinking. And that may take the place of productive work in the mornings or something like that. But for the most part, I really make sure that I get at least 2 full days a week to work on that website, to work on the next marketing campaign, to think about my team, to think about finances and analyzing. You need time. You need time to analyze. I think maybe that's because of the stage of the business that I'm at. It's got a 15-person team, but it's so easy to get distracted by clients, by employees, by so many things that can draw you away if you're not very guarded.
So are you talking specifically when you say creative time? For some of our listeners may not understand what you mean by that. You're talking about working on the business, not in it, right?
That's right. It's so like... there's a lot of ways to start businesses. And I've been on the other side where I was starting something from scratch several times, as maybe a lot of your listeners are. Like if you haven't got a 3 to 5 person team yet, you might be like, well, I don't know if that applies to me. It definitely does. Like if you're a solopreneur, if you only spend your day servicing the next client, you've probably done some good things. You might have referrals out of that. But if you aren't learning marketing or applying lessons to your website and making the customer journey smoother, if you're not developing content today, you're still invisible digitally, and you can't afford to be invisible digitally, would be my argument on that.
Did you ever read The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber? Are you familiar with that?
I've heard it so many times, I kind of know the three types, but I don't know the content very well.
The whole premise of the book, and I read it, you know, when I first started this business 10 years ago, is all about no matter how big you are or how small you are, you need to spend time working on the business, not in it. Excuse me. I think he coined that term. I believe anyway, if this was in the 80s, but it's really all about that. And yes, the business world has changed, and, you know, the way we market, the way we sell has changed. But those core principles of working on and not in your business. Now, you do have to spend time working in the business, obviously, even if you have a large team, but it's really like you refer to as, you know, creative time. It's making sure you're spending that time. It's one piece of advice I give to anybody that I coach or work with is make sure you carve out and do it just like you do at the beginning of the day. Otherwise, the day is going to get a hold of you and you're going to have good intentions to do it at 5 or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock at night. It's not going to happen. In my opinion, it's not going to happen. Yeah. So you carve out that first hour, you know, don't go on emails, tempting as it is to do, and just make sure you spend at least an hour is our recommendation working on and not in it.
Absolutely. Like I personally, I'm finding that I'm basically at my desk by 6 a.m. and I don't want to get out of that desk until at least 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And if I can go longer, I will. Maybe I need to take some breathers, go for a quick walk, something like that. Just re-energize because computer work can be daunting and dull. But you really get so much further ahead when you're creating the business. And I think we often underestimate just how much creation a business requires to be successful. It needs those tech stacks. It needs those content pieces. It needs that customer journey. You need to, as soon as you start hiring, you need your next employee hiring letter or, you know, job ad. You need every little aspect, and all of that takes literal creation time. It's not, I mean, thankfully, you know, we got tools like ChatGPT now to maybe speed up some of the more mundane versions of those things, but you just gotta spend so much time creating the business, or else you don't have a business. You just have you working.
Do you see any changes coming within your industry in the next kind of 3 to 5 years? You touched on it, a bit more online focus, more digital focus, but is there anything that you see coming without revealing any secrets that may not be business here, but is there anything you see coming your way?
I would say that everyone is at risk of Amazon. And you got to be ready for that.
Yeah.
And there's different ways to be ready for that. It's not just being online, I would say. It's about really defining your brand and who you are. Because I don't think Amazon will stay out of the custom framing space for much longer. And I don't think they'll stay out of, you know, hiring a contractor for much longer or getting marketing services for much longer. I think between Amazon and AI, there is a big, scary monster waiting to gobble you up. I could be completely wrong, but I see the signs because they've started implementing printing services, which is something they never did before. And that's starting to, I wouldn't say eat directly into my world, but I see it eating into the printing world of which I am a part. I think one of the reasons that I feel confident that I'm going to maybe be different from them, at least for a while until they start stepping on my toes more, is that I do fine art printing, specifically higher quality things. And Amazon tends to be more of a, you know, Walmart cheap kind of provider, but I can't even guarantee they'll be satisfied with that. So maybe I'm just afraid, but if anything, I'm going to use that to motivate me. And AI is the other big monster. So, you know, you really have to focus on that brand loyalty, like that, who are you? And what do you believe in? And be that. That's okay. Like, you can believe anything. You don't have to be something specific. Just be you and just be strong about it would be my advice as to what's coming down the pipeline. And for me, that's going to be being the best service for artists. Like, there just won't be a better service out there for artists. We also do service retail and we do service corporate. And I think we're going to take those same lessons we use for them and apply it in all aspects. But I'm going to use the artist market as my launch pad, if that makes some sense.
So are you talking about like niching down even further than we normally would because of these potential threats? Is that essentially what you're saying?
If I was to go
to one thing in particular that.
Yeah. If I was going to 30,000 foot view this for a second and just zoom out, it would be like in my industry. If you're an artist, let's say, and the first time, that's like my kind of client archetype, you know, you decide yours. But if I'm searching for a provider of what I do, so fine art services, which means in their case, I need someone to print my prints for me, frame them, maybe ship them for me, whatever. Right. There's also plenty of things we do like art scanning and stuff, depending on, we're trying to make that more and more, you know, nationwide as opposed to just local. then I'm wary of trying anyone because I have to put money down. I'm scared that if I go to Poster Jack, I'm just going to waste my money because maybe they'll get the crop wrong. And that's another online company that can do some of the things I can do, right? But if I fall onto my website, onto Kingston Frameworks website, and I see like this was made for me, like I'm an artist trying to make a go of it. They have not only the services that I'm looking for, but also more than that, they have content around what I care about. They're teaching courses on the subject, or they're partnering with other artists, and they're showing that off. They're showing the social proof. So how can you captivate your ideal client? You know, how, like, maybe a gym is safe from Amazon. You know, maybe Amazon isn't going to open gyms anytime soon. But maybe they'll sell personal fitness training online. So if you're a personal fitness trainer, how do you captivate your audience so specifically? Like the gym I go to now is definitely a meathead gym, and I love it. Like they really model that. They went extreme on getting the best equipment. They have really like strong sayings like you hunt with other lions. A lion hunts with other lions, doesn't lay down with sheep. Just that kind of like, just this mantra that when I go in there, I'm jacked up and I'm ready to go and lift weights because that's what I want. And it's not for everybody. It's for me. I'm captivated by that. And unless someone else is offering that, which in my town, almost no one is besides a CrossFit gym. I'm there. I'm stuck. I'm in. So that's what I want. I want for me and for anyone who's trying to compete with Amazon and the future of AI is to be less generic, more strong, more brand focused, and more captivating to their audience.
Great advice. And I don't think your fears are unfounded for sure. I can see, you know, running a marketing agency, we have to be on top of all things AI. And it's, you know, I talk to people and they keep saying, oh, it's, you know, we should pull it back. I said, well, the horse is out of the barn. Like you can't, what are you going to, how are you going to pull it back? Now you got to figure this thing out. Yeah. And take advantage of it in a positive way. I find too many times in these business type situations, people want to go back to the way things used to be. Well, most of the times you can't do that. So you better figure this out now, what you're dealing with today, and make a plan around that.
Yeah. Generic and more specific.
Yes.
Like if you can be more and more specific, even if you're being specific to three different groups of people or five or whatever, like that's fine. Just get specific for that group of people.
Yeah, agreed. Hey, Colin, we're almost out of time, but before we went live, you were telling me about some of the work that you do in the community. Do you mind sharing that with our listeners, please?
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely believe in building community. I think it's good for us. It's good for them. It's good for everybody because people still are the foundation of everything. And so I know I kind of adopted the same mindset that my dad and his business partner always had before, which was, for most cases, if someone's asking for a sponsorship, we'll probably write the check. So that's just a lot of local donations. You know, it could be a charity event, it could be an arts organization, that kind of thing. Sometimes they're a little more strategic about it, but generally we just try to be out there in the community. I think having a 42-year young business is, you know, a privileged position that we can do that. Sometimes you got to say no, but for the most part, you say yes. But the other thing that I think we do for building community that I'm quite excited about is with this new space that we opened. It's three times the size of our original space. So I thought, let's level up our art gallery and let's use that as an event space. We did leave downtown, which was where we were for 42 years. It was a cornerstone of the community. And now we're out in the East End, which is a bit of an up and coming area that people aren't too familiar with getting out to. Luckily, we're kind of a destination. People tend to search for us and premeditate and come to us. Now we have parking, so that's great. But how to get people out here before they have to think about us? How to get people out here and get excited? Well, this area doesn't have an art gallery. Well, now they do. And we throw monthly shows. We make them fun. We make them really accessible. I think art galleries can be a little bit intimidating to folks. And we really do everything we can to change that. Like at our last one, we had a gelato cart from a local gelato company. We had live music. One of my employees actually was running the music, and we implemented a kids area in the store so kids can make art while their parents are working. So that becomes a natural thing for anyone who brings their kids and feels more fun and easy as a family activity. So all that goes to what I think, you know, we had 60 people out, mostly from this specific locale, and those people all built loyalty with our brand that night. They met each other, they talked, they engaged with art, engaged with new things, and now they're used to coming to my space. So everybody wins when you build that style of community. It's a lot of effort. I have to pay staff. I have to buy some refreshments. I have to be there on a Saturday evening when I'd rather be home with my kids. But I think that effort's very much worth it.
That's a great way for us to close off. But before we let you go, Colin, where can our listeners find out more about the business?
Please feel free to follow us on the socials. I mainly use Instagram right now. But you can find us on others. Kingston Frameworks, at Kingston Frameworks, is the main social page. And of course, kingstonframeworks.ca. We would love to help anyone who wants fine printing, framing done anywhere in Canada and the US.
Thanks again, Colin. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm so happy you had me. Thanks, Pat.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.